Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Your future is important. Take time to plan for what can go right. Talk to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Peter Burke, Fine Gael Minister of State at the Department of Housing, today launched a new online tool that gathers socio-economic data from each of Ireland's regions to inform strategies such as housing and growth. He's called this a powerful resource for future planning. And Minister Peter Burke joins me now. You're very welcome, Peter Burke.
Thank you, Cormac.
And we'll talk about this powerful resource for future planning, which could inform strategic decisions in this country for a long time to come. But first, I have to get your reaction to today's exchanges in the Dáil. You heard that clip being played in the news, I'm sure. And previously, Mary Lou MacDonald on Bankers Pay, she said it was a twisted time to pave the way for bumper pay increases for the top brass. That's how she put it. Is she right?
I don't think she is. I think the government, and particularly the Minister for Finance, is reflecting the reality of our current banking landscape. If we actually look at the pre-global financial crisis, we had 12 retail banks in our country. A year and a half ago, we had 5 retail banks, KBC and Ulster Bank, who were operating for over a century almost in our country, has left the marketplace. So we're in a position where we have Bank of Ireland now, which is totally independent. It has repaid the state back 2 billion more than we put into it. It's a private company now, and obviously it's not tenable then for the Minister for Finance to control what pay levels are set within the bank.
And so the banking executive have less competition, so they should be paid more.
They obviously have less competition in the marketplace because banks have left, because there are draconian restrictions placed upon them. When you have an independent bank, you cannot stop normal variable rates of pay. When you look at these banks, half of the banking sector earn less than €50,000. And in terms of the data for people and talent that have left our banking system, 45% have cited that they got variable pay agreements with their new employer. And that's the competition pool that our banking sector is currently fishing.
Do you accept that this looks really bad for Fine Gael? Because the opposition were pointing to the fact that two Fine Gael ex-ministers, Brian Hayes, now Chief Executive of the Banking and Payments Federation of Ireland, Michael Darcy, now Chief Executive of the Irish Association of Investment Managers, pointing that they are now banking and finance lobbyists. Were they lobbying for this?
I look at the evidence, Cormac, and the facts. First of all, we have the central bank, our independent banking authority, coming out articulating the view that these measures had to be taken. There's around, I think, 35 different recommendations contained within the report about our retail banking, which the landscape has changed. And we have to respond as a government to the reality that's operating in the marketplace.
Yeah, we see now. My question was, were the ex-Fine Gael ministers lobbying for this?
I don't know. That will all be contained on the lobbying register, which is there for everyone to see. It's transparent and open. All you have to do is log on to lobbying.ie and
because
they will tell you
the
everyone that's
from
been
opposition.
Lobbying on it.
Do you accept that it looks bad for government then? It looks bad for Fine Gael lifting this cap, and we have former Fine Gael ministers as lobbyists. Now, I don't know if they were lobbying or not, but do you accept the opposition claim that it looks bad?
No, because I know in a very international marketplace where you have banking sector or retail banks competing in a very highly digital environment with fintech companies that are competing for talent very aggressively, that you cannot have controls over a bank that is independent, and secondly, that repaid this state 2 billion more than it put into it. We currently have around 5.41 billion in our two remaining pillar banks, AIB and PTSB. We own 2/3 of PTSB, 57% of AIB, and the restrictions are not being lifted for those two banks. I think that's important to reassure your listeners on those two points.
You're basically saying, though, when you're lifting a cap like this, is that there's nobody else in the Irish banking system willing to take the banking executive position at €500,000.
No, I'm not. This may never even be used in terms of actual cap, but the reality is
you cannot,
as a government, have controls. It's not tenable on a private independent company in a banking market that doesn't owe the state any money. The EMU has been very clear in terms of its policy being ensuring that any bonuses that are paid to banks are now reward focused.
And Cormac, it's important to know. They held bankrupt the state, Peter.
But in terms of Bank of Ireland, it has repaid the money with 2 billion more back into the economy.
But
these are the facts.
What's the logic?
And we may
of
not
it?
Like the reality of
is
that,
it,
but
is
those
it
are the
to
facts.
Recruit the brightest and the best? Because people are texting us and saying, weren't they the brightest and the best when they helped crash the country?
But there are more controls there now through our European banking union. We have huge controls in terms of how bonuses are paid now. And if you look, Cormac, at the moment, and this is a fact, that anything above the €20,000 bonus now pay will be subject of a taxation, a super tax of 89%. So this is geared towards a lot of the employees, as the Financial Services Union acknowledged, employees so that keep... half them are on less than €50,000. Okay. And this point... variable pay needs to be put in.
Okay, and that point is taken. But my final question on this, would you be happy with the situation where the €500,000 cap remains, but increases for people earning 50,000 or the average, or up to 100,000, let's say, that pay increases of that nature would be allowed?
Well, I'd have to ask, then, how can you justify an economy that has 35 banking licences and three would have restrictions? And one of those banks that would have restrictions placed upon it is a bank that doesn't owe any money to the Irish state, that is fully private.
Why should, on my question.
Why should it be one of 35 that has restrictions?
But that's give me a straight up answer on
but
that.
We have to be consistent. Because we have to be consistent as an economy, Cormac. We have to be fair and consistent and transparent. We're an economy that's very diverse. We're attracting huge international investment. We're competing. We have the major global banks have their home here in Ireland in terms of how they operate. And they're competing for talent and jobs in our own small open economy. And we can't have restrictions on one bank.
But in terms
when it
of lifting the
private.
Half a million cap, you say the justification you gave was that it would allow pay increases for people earning average wages as well. But when I put it to you that you can keep the cap at half a million and give the average earners an increase, you reject that out of hand.
Absolutely, you can give the average earners an increase, and that's very important. But my key point is, why would you have restrictions on a bank that does not owe any money to the state while you have 35 banking licences of other banks that are operating and competing with that Irish bank that have no restrictions placed upon it? That's different rules for different banks, and you can't have that.
Read one text that is reflective of an awful lot of text that I'm getting on this, then we'll move on to housing, Minister. It's disgusting to hear that the government have so much sympathy for the poor bankers who have to care for so many billions of euro. What about the healthcare staff who work tirelessly caring for the sick and elderly? A lot of them, including my son, who worked all through the pandemic, are still waiting for the bonus promised by the government. That reflects what we're getting on text to 51551. But with your permission, we'll move on, Minister Peter
Absolutely.
Burke.
Absolutely. And I can understand that frustration, Cormac. I know this is very difficult in terms of a bitter pill for people to swallow, but we have to acknowledge the reality that's operating in our economy. And if we have a banking sector that's weak, what happens? Ordinary citizens will pay more on their mortgage. Interest rates will obviously increase more, and we'll get it very hard to operate and compete for talent within our banking sector. And that's very difficult for some of us to swallow, but it just is the reality.
We could do a lot more on that, but we'll move on to housing for a moment. Let's take a listen to Catherine Murphy, because this is equally vitriolic in terms of its criticism from the opposition today. Catherine Murphy from the Social Democrats. Wait till you hear what she said about the government's record in your own area, housing.
The facts are we've the highest rents. The cost of buying a house has never been higher. We've got lots of targets, but people can't live in targets. They can't rent targets. They need to see this crisis delivering as though it's an emergency, where you're actually seeing the results on the ground. And people are losing hope, Taoiseach.
Is she right? This is a failure.
That's a deputy you're quoting that voted against every single positive housing bill the government put forward, like the Land Development Agency bill. That's a fact. Check the Dáil record. Like the Affordable Housing Act. Check the Dáil record. Voted against it. Those bills are delivering huge numbers of houses into our economy now. And we can see by the numbers. And I understand
from your
listeners...
In terms of a point of record, to be fair to her, I know this from listening to her. She rejected or voted against that bill because she didn't feel those houses would be affordable to the average worker.
Well, the fact of the matter is she voted against them. And secondly, they are being delivered and they will be affordable. But I want to point out, Cormac, I absolutely understand the frustration in so many families trying to realise that ambition or even see the pathway to getting the keys and realising the dream of having their first home. But that is absolutely improving and on the way. And if you look at the facts, the reality is that we have a situation where 16,000 first-time buyers purchased their home over the last 12 months. That's 33% of all purchases. But also, and critically, commencements are up, builders are on sites, and you can see that being borne out in the last 12 months, where 28,000 homes have been increased. That's a record high. And we want to keep that
But
increase and positive trajectory.
The opposition said the targets, even though they mightn't be met in all cases, that they're too low anyway.
But it's easy saying that when you're operating in very challenging circumstances. We know capacity in our labour force is very challenging. We know post-COVID and obviously with the war in Ukraine and the energy crisis that it's very difficult in terms of supply chains and costs have went up significantly. We've had to have a framework worked out with the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform to try and hold public contracts together that were very challenged, where builders were in danger of leaving sites. That's the environment the government is operating
in. No, it's not.
But we still can see.
With all due respect, because
absolutely
this government's record is not since February in the war in Ukraine. Fine Gael, your party have been in power for over a decade.
And that's why you can see over that decade, house building has increased drastically.
Oh, come on, Minister. You always mentioned lack of supply.
Lack of supply is a huge problem, but we are seeing the homes being built. When I got elected to the Dáil in 2016, we were building less than 5,000 houses per annum. Now we're up to over 28,000 homes
but that's a huge increase. I mean, that's an indictment of Fine Gael in
power.
But
the reason why, Cormac...
In the years between 2011 and 2016...
These are reasons that many people, unfortunately, do not want to hear. In the first instance, we had to deal with 3,000 ghost estates that had to have remediation plans put in to finance by the state because they were built in poor infrastructure. Not our fault. Secondly, two-thirds of our construction sector worker left our economy. Again, a huge challenge that we had to try and get capacity back up and build up our labour force. And our economy was borrowing off the lenders of last resort. We haven't got the capacity to go on a public housing building programme.
Ironically, now we have, partly because of banking misdemeanors in this country, now you're lifting pay caps. But that's another story altogether, as we discussed.
But that's a false narrative in terms of... The reality is 75% plus of our deficit was trying to service commitments we had made before the crash on current expenditure that had to be cut aggressively right from 2010 onwards. And that has been a very significant interest borrowing.
You can talk about commencements, you can talk about planning.
But which are facts.
But the record shows, equally facts, are that prices are rising up until very recently, house prices. And the record number of people in homelessness now has gone beyond the 11,300 threshold. Why?
Because of the challenge in terms of supply in our economy, which is being increased. But the government has acted. We've put six amendments to the Residential Tenancies Bill. We've brought in an eviction ban to get us out till March, where we'll be increasing emergency accommodation that window.
And what happens after the eviction ban?
We'll have more and more emergency accommodation, but also critically more supply. We also have protections on
May.
Extension. We will have significant supply in terms of emergency accommodation, but also we have reforms in terms of extension of notices of termination. We have tenancies of unlimited duration since 11th of June 2022, and you can see in terms of our rental tax credit per renter that we're putting money back in the pockets of renters, but we are pointing to a very clear pathway
where
the numbers are significantly increasing. And as you look around your locality,
let me ask you a very clear-cut question. And the pathway that you talk about will inform this, and your confidence in your pathway. So, could the homelessness numbers breach 12,000, Minister?
I don't know the answer to that question, Cormac. I'm not going to predict the future.
Is it possible?
Anything is possible in life. Hold on, Cormac. You're not going to badger me into particular pathways. Did I think since I was elected in 2016, the UK would leave Europe? Did I think there was going to be a global pandemic?
Come on now.
Did I think...
Let's not bring red herrings into this.
They're not red herrings. These are facts.
The reason I ask you this...
Did I think there was going to be a war in mainland Europe?
All these things have happened,
so I can't predict the future.
Can I ask you this? The reason I ask you this question is nobody believed it could reach 11,000. You're confident in your pathway to deliver more emergency accommodation and more housing as well. If you're confident in your pathway, can you say to me, can you give me a commitment on this programme now that in a year's time we won't be talking of 12,000 people homeless?
Absolutely not, because I can't control the variables of the war in Ukraine. How many Ukrainian citizens are we housing in emergency accommodation in this country? How many citizens have we come in through international protection? Over 12,000 in the last year. I can't control them as part of European commitments.
It's a shocking indictment of the government's record on housing and homelessness that you can't give a commitment
that Cormac, we won't
you
go
are
past
being exceptionally
12,000.
Unreasonable here, and I think most listeners will see how unreasonable you are being when I'm pointing out that we have over 60,000 Ukrainian citizens housed in this country as I speak to you now, that we have a situation where over 12,000 international protection citizens came into our country over the last year, and the state is responding by providing secure accommodation for those citizens and wraparound services to ensure that they can deal with the traumatic circumstances and environment they've come from.
I don't think
and
it's unreasonable also, to protect against 12,000 people being homeless.
But what about the increase in terms of the challenges that I'm pointing out? I can't control how many citizens come here from emergency situations, and we've seen the horrific circumstances that are ongoing in relation to Ukraine, and we as a government are rising to that challenge every single day, bringing in new initiatives, new planning exemptions, trying to ensure that those citizens are protected. But I also say, which is very clear, that people can look around in their communities, they see builders out on site, so they see commencement notices now at a record level, and that we can see that we've built 28,000 new homes in the last the last year, and also that we're up to 18,500 new social homes have been built since this government was formed.
And
that's real results, and they are real families. They're not just platitudes like the opposition says.
You mentioned the pathway to future housing, and a powerful resource for future planning which will inform that pathway, I'm sure, is what you've launched today, Minister, the Regional Development Monitor. What is it?
The Regional Development Monitor is essentially a tool that will capture all the shared data, public available data, around many different forms that's held in the state, like our CSO, the IDA, Geodirectory, OSI, the Housing Needs Demands Assessment, and it'll bring it all together so people can really see right to their locality, to the regional area, how government investment is working, where the deficits are. If I give your listeners an example, for argument's sake, we're told there's around 8% vacancy in terms of houses in our country, around 166,000 houses. That's one figure. But this will tell us what are the reasons for vacancy, you know, what percentage are caught up in wills or probate, and give us a greater insight into challenges of how many are in nursing homes that are not occupied, and it will allow us to formulate policies to really unlock all those challenges.
And will allow governments, whatever government I'm sure, to pinpoint investment in terms of housing and planning and so on in the future. Before I let you go, Minister, there was an awful lot of concern for your health 2 weeks ago. You were taken by ambulance from the Shannon to the hospital. All okay?
All is okay. Look, it was a scary time. I'd say my blood pressure has gone up a little bit from your interview there now, Cormac. But no, thank God all is okay. I just want to really acknowledge the staff in St. James's Hospital and the paramedics, and indeed the staff at the House of Doctors, and all my colleagues have been so, so good and so kind. And I generally appreciate that from the bottom of my heart.
Okay, well, we're all glad you're well, I'm sure, on both sides of the political divide as well in Leinster House. You've passed our bleep test from a cardio point of view anyway. I don't know politically.
Thank you.
Minister Peter Burke of Fine Gael, thank you.